final case for argument this morning is number 2014-1594. Jefferson Industries Corporation versus Madison County Board of Revision. And here's where the Chinese fire drill comes in. Mr. Ray.
Your Honor, may it please the court. My name is Nicholas Ray of the law firm Vorys, Sater, Seymour, and Pease. We represent the property owner, appellant Jefferson Industries. The case before the court this morning involves a 683,000 square foot manufacturing facility in Madison County, Ohio. Property was originally constructed in 1989 and expanded several times over the years. As of the January 1st, 2011 tax lien date, original portion of the property was 21 years old. The appraiser for the property owner, Mr. Eberle, estimated an effective age of 11 years, and the appraiser for the school district estimated an effective age of 15 to 20 years for the subject property. Like most manufacturing properties, the property in question includes a significant amount of business fixtures. Based upon Mr. Hinkle's testimony in the BTA decision, it is appellant's position that value of this property was commingled with the real estate value. While appellees would like to classify this case as a simple disagreement amongst the appraisers, the questions raised are fundamental to a fair and uniform system of property taxation in the state of Ohio. The BTA and the appellees failed to address these issues, and Mr. Hinkle failed to demonstrate an understanding of these core taxation concepts. The reliance upon a cost approach to value for a property of this age, when competent probative evidence of the market value of the property exists, based upon our searches of Ohio case law, has never before occurred. Appellees failed to cite any decision which does so, and it should not be allowed to stand here. While appellant takes issue with appellee's evidence and the BTA's treatment of it, certainly reversible error on its own, the briefs adequately address the back and forth of the appraisals.
Well, so isn't it the case that different portions of the facility are constructed at different times?
Some of them are more recent. Some of them are older. What we have in this case is the two appraisers differ on the effective age. So the appraiser essentially is looking at all of the improvements which are made to the property as of tax lien date and trying to come up with an effective age for the improvements being valued. Mr. Eberle's at 11 years. Mr. Hinkle's at a range of 15 to 20 years for the subject property. And ultimately, end of the day, what we have is the Board of Tax Appeals relying upon a cost approach to value, a cost approach for a property this age, which in a case 7 years earlier, the BTA correctly stated was not probative of value, that it was too uncertain to rely upon a cost approach for the property 7 years before. Now, 7 years later, with about four or five words, the BTA says, well, we're going to disregard that. We have no support for using a cost approach for a property this age, and frankly, we'll go ahead and adopt it. Fundamental to Ohio property taxation is the effort to tax a property at the value it would sell at in the open market. As a result, the Ohio Administrative Code 5703-2507 discusses the use of the three approaches to value, and the Administrative Code holds that when comparable sales exist, which is the case here, Mr. Eberle had comparable sales from the state of Ohio, the county schedule that they provided, Exhibit C had sales in Ohio of manufacturing properties, sales of manufacturing properties in the state of Ohio existed for this property. When those sales exist, the administrative code makes clear the preference for the sales comparison or the market data approach for valuing properties of this type. The administrative code also makes clear that due to the difficulties in estimating accrued depreciation, older or obsolete building value estimates often vary from market indications. Mr. Hinkle estimates a 15 to 20 year effective age. Again, we are aware of no cases where the cost approach has been used as the primary method to value a property of this age. Ohio's deference to the sales comparison approach for properties of this type is clear. In fact, looking at the BTA's earlier decision, it made clear that the cost approach was not appropriate for the property, and it based that on the fact that the original portion of the property was constructed in 1989, and the use of a cost approach for a property with original construction in 1989 was too speculative. The fact that the original construction occurred in 1989 didn't change. The original part of the building is still the original part of the building. The BTA's one sentence, one clause comment that the cost approach is presented by Mr. Hinkle's sales comparison approach, quite frankly, is laughable. As detailed in the appraisal report, the sales comparables involve one rejected 10-year-old Ohio sale and a number of sales from outside the state. Nothing that the state of Ohio has ever relied upon to value property. Appellee's only support for a cost approach in their appraisal is a cite to the LTC Properties decision beginning on page 19 of its brief. The case is not remotely controlling in this case and, quite frankly, actually supports the property owner's position in this case. In that case, the auditor originally valued the property using a cost approach, which again is not unheard of in the state of Ohio based upon the information that's available to the auditor at the time. The property owner and LTC failed to develop any probative evidence of market value for the subject property and only argued for a different cost schedule. The property owner and LTC, unlike in the present case, was not compliant with the Ohio Administrative Code. While the LTC Properties decision discussed real property as any property attached to the land, this is qualified by, unless the statutes otherwise establish the item to constitute personal property. It's this unless statement that we've litigated in Ohio forever. What is the permanently affixed business fixture, and is it personality or is it realty? In reviewing existing case law, the LTC Properties decision, starting on page 8, makes clear that the cost approach is accorded very little weight. The same reasoning should be applied here. In fact, the principle of substitution, which the appellees cite to on page 23 of their brief, is clearly addressed in the LTC decision on page 11. The court in that case found that it set the high-end cap for what a buyer would be willing to pay. It's not the market value. Where no evidence of market value was developed, the court was left with affirming the auditor's original value. In an often cited concurring opinion, Justice Pfeiffer admonished property owners to obtain an appraisal report. Well, that's what's been done here, Your Honor, and Mr. Eberle's appraisal report is the only evidence consistent with Ohio existing law. Eberle developed a supportable sales comparison approach as required by the Ohio Administrative Code as the primary reliance for valuing the subject property. Mr. Hinkle did not. The BTA's sudden reversal and acceptance of a flawed cost approach for a property that Mr. Hinkle estimates is between 15 and 20 years old in effective age is clearly inconsistent with Ohio law. Any analysis of this court, once such a conclusion is reached, can only lead to the conclusion that the BTA decision must be reversed. There's no question that the value relied upon in Mr. Hinkle's appraisal report was the cost approach. The comment by the BTA that it's supported by the sales comparison approach, quite frankly, is laughable. The position that the decision should be overturned.
Well, was there a sales comparison approach in his report?
There was, Your Honor. And it included, as I mentioned, a sale that was 10 years old, the one sale he had from Ohio, which the BTA had rejected the previous time because it included the transfer of business value, and then included a number of sales from outside the state. The position that the board decision should be reversed is also supported by the fact that the value includes value attributable to tangible personal property, a position which clearly the appellees disagree with. And the disagreement comes from the classification of an area called the High Bay Area and the inability of Mr. Hinkle to account for the differences in cost between the areas he classified as heavy and light manufacturing. When asked to distinguish between real and personal property, on page 44 of the supplement, Hinkle's answer is that if it's attached, it's realty, and if it's not attached, it's personal. Well, that's clearly not the test, Your Honor. There is nothing in the record of this case to establish, in fact, that the area is heavy manufacturing. The opposite's actually true. The appellees include Marshall's definition on page 20 of their brief, but the uncontroverted detailed record actually establishes that the fundamental items which may classify an area as heavy manufacturing are not present in this case in the High Bay, which, except for the High Bay, which both appraisers account for in their cost approach. Starting on page 103 of the supplement, Mr. Eberle discusses the construction and the distinction of the property itself from the manufacturing process. Mr. Eberle clearly gets it. These items include, there is no difference throughout the facility in column spacing. Again, Marshall's would hold the column spacing would be different in a heavy manufacturing area. The trusses are all pre-engineered, while heavy manufacturing areas would not be pre-engineered trusses. The structural steel columns are the same throughout.
So is it the essence of your assertion that personal property is included? Is it this categorization of certain areas as heavy manufacturing as opposed to light manufacturing?
Yeah, Mr. Hinkle makes a distinction of this one particular area as heavy manufacturing and includes a higher cost for that area. Now, Marshall's makes clear what defines, in their view, a heavy manufacturing area, and it includes things like different columns, different structural steel. And what we have in this case is the testimony of Mr. Eberle. We have Mr. Eberle as the expert relating his conversation with the construction engineer that the area was constructed as light manufacturing. We have Mr. Eberle testifying in pictures in his appraisal report that the overhead cranes, right? So we think about a heavy manufacturing area. We have a heavy manufacturing area, or an area, high bay area, that has an overhead steel crane, that has foundations, that has pits, that has tunnels, the types of things that you would expect. But in Mr. Eberle's testimony, he distinguishes the manufacturing process from the building itself. The manufacturing process, the overhead cranes in this case, are not supported by the building. The building's not designed to support the weight of the overhead cranes. They're on individual independent step columns that are pictured in Mr. Eberle's appraisal report. And so it's not the structure that's supporting this. The Marshall's definition of those things, as far as the structural steel, as far as the column spacing, as far as the trusses, are not present in the case. The engineer responsible for constructing the area said, we didn't construct it as heavy manufacturing area to Mr. Eberle. Again, this question of heavy manufacturing was there in the 2004 case. The property owner was well aware of it. The BTA goes back to say, well, in the 2004 case, we said it was heavy manufacturing because of a distinction between distribution space and manufacturing space. Quite frankly, Your Honor, I have no idea what they're talking about. There's no facts in this case that talk about the difference between distribution space and heavy manufacturing space. The property owner in this case knew that this would be an issue, and therefore Mr. Eberle underwent more extensive review of the property and more extensive testimony as it related to why this was not heavy manufacturing space. To then ignore all of that isn't acceptable.
But the appraisal report that you're challenging, you're saying there's nothing in that appraisal report that says crane and a certain amount of value attached to it and taxes it. What we're talking about is there's a dispute about how to characterize certain parts of the facility for purposes of applying Marshall's valuation service cost information.
And what we have is the appellees pointing out in their appraisal, well, the report says one thing. The report says it's not included. Well, then when Mr. Hinkle's asked, well, why is the cost higher? His answer, and you can look at page 4 of their brief and page 114 to 115 of the record, all talks about the business activities, the foundations. In Mr. Hinkle's mind, he thought he was including items of personal property. That's because his understanding of what is real and personal isn't correct under Ohio law. The BTA then goes on to say, well, it's okay if personal tea is included because it would sell with the property. That's never been the test. That's never been how we value it. We've always broken out the personal tea when it sells. The department looks for accounting records. The department comes after those numbers historically as personal tea.
But, well, I mean, what is your understanding of the personal property that has been included in this assessment?
According to Mr. Hinkle's testimony, all I know is what Mr. Hinkle thinks he included.
All right.
So Mr. Hinkle thinks he included foundations and supported concrete floors and additional, I'd have to look, Your Honor, but page 4 of the brief, Mr. Hinkle discusses what he believes the higher cost is attributable to. It's different than his appraisal report, admittedly. His appraisal report says something else. But then the appraisal report says all these items are what indicates heavy manufacturing. Well, at the end of the day, none of those items are present in this case. So it isn't heavy manufacturing. That was inappropriate. Your Honor, the court can't get by the fact that the cost approach was relied upon on a property that's 20-some years old. The analysis is pretty easy. Frankly, the disagreement amongst appraisers after that as to the value isn't much difference. We're challenged with finding what the property would sell for. The administrative code says we use the market data sales comparison approach. There's only one reliable one in the record. That's Mr. Eberle's. The value is $10,420,000, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. Ms. Gorey.
Thank you. May it please the court. I'm Kelly Gorey of Rich and Gillis Law Group. I'm here today on behalf of the Madison County Auditor and Board of Revision and also the West Jefferson Local School District, who are here with me today. I want to start out by saying what this case is not. It's not a classification case. In fact, it is a competing appraisal case. This court is very clear on what the applicable standard of review is when competing appraisals are presented to the Board of Tax Appeals. This court does not sit as a super BTA. It does not review factual classifications de novo. In fact, the court has to affirm the decision of the BTA unless there is a total absence of evidence supporting it. One of the things that I wanted to note was, in fact, the personal property issue was not raised as an assignment of error in their notice of appeal to this court. So the appellees would contend that the court might find that that is properly waived as it wasn't raised. Excuse me, but I will address that for a minute. I think that this court's question as to what exactly they think is personal property is proper. There's actually no evidence of in the record entirely of what is should be personal property and what should not be. I think in their brief they allude to, I guess I'll call them concrete pads that would be underneath some of the machinery and equipment. The record is devoid of any evidence whatsoever of these actually existing. They did not call a representative of the property owner to testify about, here's what we have at our facility, here's what we believe is personal, here's what we believe is real. Mr. Eberle, their appraiser, doesn't even talk about it. In fact, he was asked whether or not the Marshall and Swift heavy classification could include what he believed to be personal property. And he said, yes, I believe it's possible that this classification could include some personal property. That's basically the extent of any evidence of personal property that's in the record. If the court will note, essentially the same argument was raised in the 2004 case. And the BTA there held that there was no evidence in the record as to how these alleged concrete pads were even valued. The same is the case here. There's no evidence of their existence, period, in the record. I think the court made a great point about the fact that we're talking about 150,000 square feet of space in the total of the 685,000 square foot facility. That's what the primary, I guess, argument is about in terms of the classification. If we look at Marshall and Swift's definition, it actually focuses only on real property aspects, which are the higher ceiling heights, the thicker concrete floors, the less partitioning per square feet. All of these, basically every single one of these items are, there's evidence found in the record that these are the case. And the BTA, when it, I guess, reaffirmed its 2004 decision, it did set forth four factual findings. And two of those were that there's evidence in the record that the floors are thicker. Both appraisers essentially agree on that. Mr. Hinkle testified that there's 10-inch reinforced concrete floors in the heavy manufacturing area. Mr. Eberle agreed that they were at least 8 inches in the heavy manufacturing area. Nobody disagreed that the bay heights are 60 feet. There's evidence in the record for both of those determinations, and the BTA in this case did say, we review the relevant facts for 2011, and we determine that we agree with our previous factual findings. One thing about the Marshall and Swift definition of heavy as well is that, and this is in the BTA exhibit, it specifically says that while the floors are heavy enough to support most equipment and machinery, any special foundation that's required for the manufacturing process is not included within this definition. So Mr. Hinkle, in utilizing the Marshall and Swift definition, he also testified that he called Marshall and Swift because he was concerned about getting this right, because there's really the three separate uses within this large facility. And all we need to do is look to that exhibit to determine there's no additional concrete pads, I would say, that Mr. Hinkle's included in his cost approach. And then talking a couple minutes about the cost approach, we actually cited two cases in our brief, which we believe both are very applicable here. The first one is the GM case. And in that case, that was actually the valuation of an automobile stamping facility, like the subject property is. The Board of Education and owner also presented competing appraisals. Both appraisals looked at the cost approach and the sales comparison approach. And the court ended up adopting the appraisal report of the Board of Education and specifically found...
Was this the BTA decision or...
No, this is actually a Supreme Court decision. Let me see if I've got the... No. We did cite it in our brief. I think it was 1996, perhaps. Yes, it's 1996, GM Motors v. Cuyahoga County. There, the property owner essentially argued the same thing, that it was improper to use the Board of Education's cost approach for the value for the subject property. And this court said, you know, this is exactly the type of factual finding that the court defers to. And it found that the BTA did not abuse their discretion in adopting the Board of Education's cost approach and affirmed the BTA's decision. And then in the Youngstown sheet and tube case, there's similar arguments in that as well to what is being made here. That was the evaluation of a 75 to 100-year-old steel production facility. And there, the owner also presented an appraisal utilizing the sales comparison approach. The county presented an appraisal using the cost approach. Again, the court accepted the BTA's acceptance of the cost approach.
Now, Mr. Ray, I think, is specifically citing to administrative code and so forth. Did the court address that in those cases?
No. The administrative code generally has three acceptable appraisal approaches, which the county auditor must follow. One of those is, in fact, the cost approach. There's additional basis for the Board of Education using the cost approach. Mr. Hinkle actually testified that, yes, he recognizes that these are often either built to suit or owner-occupied facilities, and so they seldom sell. When there's not available data to do a competent sales comparison approach, it's not uncommon to rely upon a different valuation approach. The cases that they've cited regarding the cost approach, yes, we won't disagree that the BTA has held in different circumstances, okay, it's, you know, this facility is too old to use a cost approach. Well, here there's evidence in the record that the cost approach is the best evidence of value because the sales comparison approach is not necessarily probative because of the lack of sales data.
Although Mr. Ray would say that there is plenty of data that his appraiser relied on.
I think the difference is that his appraiser used only light manufacturing facilities that didn't necessarily have the heavy manufacturing aspect that the subject property does have. I think there's ample evidence in the record to support that it is, that this only 150,000 square feet, because of its thicker floors, because of its reinforced walls, because of its high bay heights, where the craneways are located, it's properly classified as heavy manufacturing. So what Mr. Eberle did is he generally located I think they were mostly smaller facilities. I don't believe any of them had the 60-foot bay heights like the subject. He essentially looked at the property as it doesn't exist. While there certainly are portions of it that are light manufacturing, and the Board of Education's appraiser doesn't disagree with that. In fact, that's what he classified majority of the property. What he was focusing on in his sales was properties that actually have this heavy manufacturing aspect. And so there being only that one sale in Ohio, he looked outside of Ohio. And the BTA did say in noting that his sales comparison approach was supportive of its cost approach, that the BTA could also rely on that as well. I want to talk for 1 second about the cost approach specifically. There's been an allegation made in the briefs that the facility was constructed with low cost. There's absolutely no evidence of that in the record whatsoever. When opposing counsel asked Mr. Eberle to actually state the specific aspects of the facility that show that it's low cost, he simply said, oh, it's low cost all day long because manufacturers build at state minimum building codes. That was it. He didn't actually cite one specific aspect of the property itself. That was low cost. So Mr. Hinkle properly used average cost, which if you look at what Marshall and Swift says that is, almost identically matches how Mr. Hinkle had valued the property. And if we look at the definitions for what is low cost, it's minimal interior finishes. There's no evidence of that. It's low cost slab. There's absolutely no evidence of that. Again, Mr. Hinkle talked about how he had talked with JIC about the actual cost to construct the facility. He talked about it twice in the BTA hearing. He said that the JIC had relayed to him that the original cost, which would be for the 1988 portion to 2004, was $100 a square foot for real estate only. And then he later commented that the subsequent additions, which would be, well, I guess that was in 2007, so it would have been 2004 to 2007, was $60 a square foot. Mr. Eberle uses $29 a square foot for the entire 685,000 square feet And Frank's testimony regarding the actual cost was completely unrebutted by JIC. Again, they could have presented a representative of the owner to testify about that, but they did not. In sum, we believe that JIC has not met its burden in proving that the BTA abused its discretion. The court will simply find that there is, in fact, sufficient probative evidence supporting the BTA's decision, and we therefore respectfully request that it be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gari. Mr. Ray, you have 51 seconds for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be brief. The cost approach in this case is not applicable for a property of this age. The Ohio Administrative Code makes that clear. There is nothing in the cases in GM or Youngstown Seat and Tube that deals with the guidance from the code as to the proper method. Cost approach on a property of this age is not applicable. Sales are available. Not only Mr. Eberle's sales, but the county provided sales. Frankly, the county's detailed property record cards in this case don't classify this area as heavy manufacturing. They have a standard land use code that calls everything a foundry in heavy manufacturing, which it's not. And they have detailed for every single improvement, and every detail in every property record card classifies this building as light manufacturing. The testimony in this case is clear. We're not relying upon a cost approach. Providing evidence of the cost approach is not applicable in our case. If they wanted evidence of cost approach, they certainly could have provided it and got the actual cost data. The testimony in this case is clear. The property doesn't meet the definition of heavy manufacturing, and the cost approach is not applicable. We're told that the sales comparison approach that we need to use in this case, there's one reliable sales comparison approach. It was developed by Mr. Eberle. We're tasked with finding the value the property would sell at, not some substitution value, which the LTC court said is the highest possible value that could come up with. I know the county and the schools like the highest possible value, but that's not what we're here for. We're here to find the value it would sell at. Ohio law has a preference for the sales comparison approach, does not rely upon the cost approach, and should not in this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Ray. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.